WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, it's the 3rd of July, 2019. My name is Arthur. You're listening to the grand hour at its new time, here at 5 to 6 a.m. I'm going to start things off with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. It's a show I featured previously, a serialized one. This is just a 30-minute. It's not even 30 minutes long. But it's episode 566 in the yours truly, Johnny Dollar family. This one's called The Carmen Kringle Matter, with an original air date of the 22nd of November, 1957. This features Bob Bailey. There are five or six folks that played Johnny Dollar. I selected this one because it was actually written by Bob Bailey. And the original air date was the 22nd of November, 1957. The Carmen Kringle Matter. Thanks.
Johnny Dollar.
Pat McCracken, Johnny. How's the weather in Palm Springs?
A blonde in a bikini just melted past my poolside window. Goodbye now.
Oh, don't hang up. Johnny, this job's just a few miles north of where you are. It'll take maybe a day to clear it up.
Yeah, you said that last Christmas, Pat, and I got trapped in a blizzard. This season, I soak in the sun. Happy New Year.
John Boy, we have a bonus list in this office. Your name could be on it.
Near where I am, huh?
It's a ghost town named Calico. An old prospector named Kringle is breathing his last up there.
I thought old prospectors never died.
He wants to change the beneficiary on a $50,000 policy, but a nephew, Ned Kringle, threatens suit if we let him. So you contact our agent, Gene Craig, in Barstow.
Who's the new beneficiary?
Carmen Kringle.
Carmen?
A burrow.
A burrow?
Yeah. If I don't hear from you, Johnny, Merry Christmas.
Bailey, in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Carmen Kringle matter. Expense account item one, $1.40. Telegram to Gene Craig in Barstow telling him where and when to meet me. Item two, $50 even to Al Sterner for his charter plane to the ghost town of Calico. Says there's something about desert country that's good for the soul. And in spite of the air bumps, I got a panoramic view of the great Mojave that took my breath away. The sun's setting rays hit the weird mineral stratas of the Calico Range and turned them into a patchwork of beauty. Night comes quickly in this country, and I turned to Al when a Christmas tree cluster of blinking lights appeared under our wings. By way of answer, he put the plane into a glide and set us down on the smooth surface of a dry lake bed.
Shows up?
No, thanks. Well, there seems to be plenty of company.
That's just an old coyote. Don't stand too long or you'll freeze to the spot.
Okay.
Good luck. Call me when you want to be picked up.
I watched Al's plane until it was swallowed by the darkness. Suddenly, I got that feeling in the hair on the back of my neck that I wasn't alone. The moon was up enough to make out shadows, and silhouetted in a circle around me was a strange collection of figures. One of the pack moved toward me, and for a crazy second, I thought I bumped into Santa Claus's reindeer. Then a car without lights came rushing at me. The headlights slammed on, and I got a glimpse of a donkey herd scattering into the night.
All right, mister. Walk toward me, slow, with your hands high.
I've learned never to argue with a Winchester 94, so I followed orders. I spotted the weaving headlamps of another car approaching and prayed it was the agent, Gene Craig.
Close enough, sonny. I can pop the rattlers off a sidewind at 60 yards. So don't you make no sudden move.
He was maybe 60 with gray sideburns and a frosty goatee. A marshal's badge was pinned to his leather jacket.
All right now, mister.
Marshal, that's all right. That's Mr. Dollar.
Huh?
I'm supposed to meet him earlier. I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Dollar. I'm Gene Craig.
Huh?
I couldn't get here until I drove Doc Spangler up to Chris. He's had another setback, Marshal.
Yeah, some darn fool let down a rail on his corral and Chris Kringle's whole herd got loose. He don't give a chuck for most of them, though, except Carmen. Now he's fretting because she's running wild. Almost had him tracked down when this here fella showed up. If you vouch for him, huh, Gene?
You are Johnny Dollar, aren't you?
Well, a frozen facsimile.
Come on, I'll drive you into Calico.
You tell Chris that I'll have his Carmen back in the corral before the moon's full. And, Gene.
Yeah, Marshal.
Tell the old sourdough to stay alive, will you? We need him around here. Sorry about mistaking you, Mr. Dollar.
Jean Craig, with a J, knew her way around. She was strictly business and filled me in fast on the old prospector with the odd name and his desire to change the beneficiary of his policy.
Everybody calls him Chris because every year he loads up his burrows with toys and presents for the miners and their families back in the hills.
Uh-huh.
The kids really think he is Santa Claus. I'm afraid it won't be a very merry one for them this year.
Well, what makes everyone so sure Chris Kringle is giving up the ghost?
Doc Spangler says there's nothing apparently wrong with him. It's more like he's given up.
Oh, what's with this Scrooge character, the nephew?
Ned Kringle seems all right. It's the man with him, Willie D'Agostino. He does the talking for Ned. You think he was going to inherit the money?
Well, maybe he's expecting to. You know, you're making a good case for Carmen.
Can a burro be a beneficiary, Johnny?
Chris can leave it to a three-masted schooner if he wants, providing a trust is set up.
Could the people of Calico be that trust if they promise to take care of Carmen?
Yeah, I guess so. Why?
That's the way Chris wants it. That way there'll always be a Christmas in Calico.
What happens when Carmen goes to donkey heaven? Or is it burros that never die?
There'll always be burros in Calico, Johnny. And one of them could always be named Carmen.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Carmen Kringle matter.
Well, here we are, Johnny. Calico, once the richest silver city in the West.
It was unbelievable. Like seeing a page from the past. Walter Knott, famed creator of Knott's Berry Farm and Western historian, had bought the old ghost town's battered remnants and restored it to the way it must have appeared in the wild and fevered days of the silver load. I could make out signs nailed to weathered batten boards that told of a flourishing and colorful past. Joe's Saloon, The Last Chance, Hyena House Hotel, Lane's Mercantile, The Calico Prince. High on a hill at the edge of town, people were gathered at the entrance to a cave that was illuminated by hundreds of miners' lamps.
And who gets you, huh?
Almost like it was planned.
They're rehearsing for the Christmas Eve pageant. Maybe you can spend Christmas Eve with us, Johnny, if you don't have other plans.
I have a day with a steam-heated swimming pool.
What?
Come on, let's meet the old man. Expense account item three, $100 for a quart of perfume or a mink scarf, anything to wipe the hurt look off of Jean Craig's face. She led me up the steps to the rickety porch of Chris Kringle's wooden shack.
A tall figure carrying a black bag stepped toward us out of the shadows.
Keeney, I'm glad to see you. Will you drive me back to town?
Why, certainly, Doc. Oh, this is Mr. Dollar.
Hi, son.
Hi.
Chris, is he still all right?
I couldn't say. Been sitting out here waiting for you.
You haven't seen the patients?
The medical man owes a duty and all that, but I'm too old to talk back to a gun.
They wouldn't let you in?
Tired of it.
Well, I'm not a medical man.
Well, please be careful, Johnny.
I told you, Starbone, stay away and leave the old man to...
Well, if it ain't little Jeannie, the policy fixer. And who are you, mister?
Willie D'Agostino. This is Johnny Dollar. He's from the insurance company to see about changing the policy.
Who is it, Willie? Who are you talking to?
Relax, will you, and let him give us some tourist directions back to Barstow. There'll be no policy changing at this late date, mister. Ned Kringle is very bereaved at the imminence of his uncle's demise. Just family admitted at this sad hour. So mosey along, folks. I'll leave the young man to his grave.
Your foot is in the door, mister. I don't like your foot. And I don't like you.
His hand moved to his shoulder holster, but Gene was standing right beside me. It was Doc who suddenly shouldered past D'Agostino and fled up the stairs that gave him my chance. I kicked the door wide. Threw him off balance. I shoved Genie aside, and that was a mistake. Because a million Christmas tree lights blazed up in my skull. Then slowly the tree lights faded away, and I saw Jeannie fussing over me and looking worried. A young, nice-looking fellow was seated next to a marble-top table. D'Agostino leaned against the stone fireplace and dangled his gun, smiling like he had a stacked deck.
He's all right, Doc?
A nasty cut, but no fracture.
I know how to pull my punches, Doc.
The old man. How is he?
No better, no worse. Just lying up there staring at the ceiling.
I want to see Chris. I have a right to, Ned. I'm an old friend.
Willie, wouldn't it be okay if Gene just went up?
No, let him die in peace. He's past carrot hoe season.
Willie, these people have
I
a right...
I said no! I'll get a hero boy and his feet to shove off. Go on.
Come on, Johnny. Help me, Doc.
How's it going to feel, Ned? Sharing blood money with a hoodlum. Your uncle paid for that policy with a pick and a shovel. It took a lot of years, a lot of sweat. And he's had your name on that policy ever since you were born.
Oh, man, Kringle never saw pay dirt in his life. Ned here give him money to live on, paid the premiums on his policy. Chris was always tapping the kid, claiming he had a new find. He was going to mine a million.
Wait, shut up!
The old man's dying. Tell him, Ned. Tell him how the old phony was always taking the bows, making like Santa Claus with the money you give him.
Willie, haven't you got a...
Tell him to hold on to the money! I know he's been waiting a long time for this. Me. Willie D'Agostino, that's who.
Is that true, Ned?
Yeah. I thought my uncle would make a strike someday. I honestly thought he'd strike it rich. I know he tried.
He did strike it rich, Ned. When he dies, every man, woman, and child in this town will mourn him. He'll live in their hearts. What will people remember about you, Mr. D'Agostino?
All right, I'll get out. Get out and stay out before I... Willie, this rifle will make a hole in your belly big enough to pass a borax beam through. So you just drop that gun. I don't know what to shout into, Bob, but you're guilty of carrying sidearms. You're threatening violence, Mr. D'Agostino. And ain't nobody does that in Calico, long as I'm the marshal. Now, you better get.
Ed Noller, I love you.
Oh, don't let Gladys hear that.
Well, I'll see how Chris is.
Doc, tell the old buzzard that I got his Carmen back in the corral. Jingle bells and all.
Yeah, nice work, Ed.
Now, what's holding you, mister?
Okay. All right, let's go, Ned. Let the squares have a round, huh?
I'm going to stay here, Willie. I want to be here when Chris...
Hey, that's a good idea. That way, no fooling around with the will, huh? Smart kid, that Ned. See you at the funeral, huh?
I'll go up now.
You were wonderful, Marshal. You too, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, sure. I take a nice sock on the head.
Hey, you folks better come up, too. Chris wants to say something.
Oh, I figured on this. The corral, come on.
Hey,
Gino must have had another gun in his car. One of the bullets had found the mark he intended. Willie Boy wasn't taking any chances that Carmen Kringle would inherit $50,000. We found the burro lying on her side, quite dead. Jingle bells and all.
Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Carmen Kringle matter.
Marshall, Johnny, how could he have been so cruel? Carmen dead. It's just not right.
I figured D'Agostino might be mean enough to try killing Chris's pet burro.
We can't tell him about it. It would kill him for sure.
He'll have to know the truth, Gene. He'll have to decide about the will.
Yeah, truth is always the best. And easy this time.
Easy?
Huh? Yeah. I'll just take these bells off of this poor little feller, and I'll put them where they belong. Carmen?
What?
Carmen. Oh. Mosey over here now.
Well, you pulled a switch. You put these bells on another book.
Yeah. I didn't trust that greasy character, and I was right. And nice girl, Carmen.
Oh, I'll be.
Now, you folks go on up and see old Chris. I'll keep an eye on this here $50,000 jackass. That's the way it's going to be, ain't it, Johnny?
Yes, sir. That's the way it's going to be. But I was wrong. The roly-poly little old man in the four-poster bed with his white whiskers resting on the quilt changed his mind again. Even after hearing about how the marshal saved Carmen.
I wasn't going to scratch Ned's name off of that insurance, Mr. Dollar. I tried to shake that D'Agostino, figuring he'd take his hooks off of Ned if he thought my Carmen was going to get the money. Oh, I was scared for a while that I just might have to up and die to square my nephew's gambling debts.
I'm sorry, Chris. I'll work my fingers raw paying every cent I owe, but I'll pay him back with interest. I want you around.
Hey, Mr. Dyer.
Yeah, Chris.
Lift the lid on that footlocker and fetch me one of them bags in there. They're pretty heavy, but you look strong.
Well, they're sure heavy enough. You got them stuffed with silver?
Yeah, it's better than silver. Open it up. Open it up. Yeah, as you can. Yeah, recognize that?
Yeah.
Maybe you'd better have a good sleep, Chris. This here is plain old gravel.
Oh, plain gravel.
It's uranium, Doc, huh? The last batch assayed at $900 a ton. What? And I got a mountain of it staked out. In both our names, Ned.
You don't care.
Why, Chris? Mr. Dollar, if you and Jeannie check with the Barstow Bank, you'll find that they'll extend credit on the strength of that assay. You reckon you can spend 2 days buying enough presents so as we won't disappoint the folks hereabouts?
Expense account item 4, $68 even. Telephone calls to 5 principal cities where I thought Willie D'Agostino might be remembered. The police departments had a long list of reasons why they remembered Willie. That was my Christmas present to them. Expense account item 5, another 50. Truck rental to haul the presents we bought for Ned to give away come Christmas morning. And then it was Christmas Eve. We sat on the Kringle's porch and watched the procession up to the Maggie Mine. The flickering lights from the miners' lamps reflecting on the faces of the happy children. Old Chris was bundled up in blankets, his little eyes twinkling, chuckling to himself like he knew all the answers to the universe. Gene was there, too.
Kind of nice, isn't it, Johnny?
Kind of nice. Marshal Ed Noller was one of the wise men in the procession. I recognized the sideburns. And Doc Spangler couldn't hide his height. Oh, he wore an awful beard. Ned Kringle led the burro that carried the Blessed Mother. Yeah, you guessed it. The burro was Carmen Kringle. Expense account total, including return to Palm Springs and incidentals, $229.75. But forget it, Pat. This is the best holiday I ever had. And I was only cold at the start.
From all of us to all of you, may this be your very merriest Christmas ever. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
The Carmen Kringle Matter, an episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, is actually episode 566. With an original air date of the 22nd of November 1957, that stars Bob Bailey as Johnny Dollar. He also was given the writing credit for that particular episode. That is the precise reason why I selected that. Also, you're going to start seeing a lot of advertising for Christmas in July. So I figured, what the heck? Why not go with a Christmas story here? I got to fulfill an FCC obligation for a moment. So,
this is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. If you're just joining us, my name is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. This program used to be seated in the 6 to 7 o'clock hour on Wednesday mornings, but it has now moved to the 5 to 6 for reasons beyond my control. As usual, I usually have a double billing of radio drama. This morning, I'm going to follow Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, with a Western. That actually had some little Western undertones there, didn't it? That the Carmen Kringle Matter. Well, anyway, Six Shooter is a fan favorite. Stars Jimmy Stewart, or James Stewart, as the Six Shooter. This is episode 31, Revenge at Harness Creek. This has an original air date of the 29th of April, 1954. Again, my name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour. Thanks.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter. Just one of many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with the Bob Hope Show, the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford. Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs. all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
I'd known the Harcourt brothers a good many years. First time I passed through Harness Creek, they were just youngsters. Of course, that was before their pa died. But Cash Harcourt, he was all of 26 now, and a great big star on his vest, and a Colt 45 stuck in his belt. It seemed funny to think of him as the town sheriff. Well, not that he didn't look the part, but I couldn't help remembering him when his legs weren't long enough to reach the stirrups and the pony. Lex Harcourt, he wasn't quite so grown up. He must be about 20 or so. Now, he sure tried to appear older, though. A great big mustache sprawling across his upper lip and a kind of a swagger when he walked. But in spite of all his trying to be old and everything, he was still Cash Harcourt's kid brother, and everybody knew it. Well, anyway, the reason I came into Harness Creek is I was going to sign up for the Silver Spur cattle drive down in New Mexico. Only trouble was I hit town a week or so early. Silver Spur outfit is still out in the range, so while I was waiting, I stopped off with the Harcourt boys and their aunt, Mrs. Petrie. She kept house for them.
There now. More fritters, Fritz?
Oh, no. Thanks, Miss Petrie. I've had my share.
You Cash?
I'm full up too, Aunt Bess.
No need to ask you, Lex. There you are. That's the last of them.
Well, now, Aunt Bess, you know the only reason I take seconds is so you won't have to throw the food away.
Seconds? Seems to me that's about his fourth helping the fritters, ain't it, Britt?
Well, I don't know, Cash. I'm not for certain. I sort of lost count after the third time he stuck that plate out.
Big growing boy like him. I guess he's bound to stow away a lot of grub.
Well, now, I wouldn't josh about my growing so much if I was you, Cash. Just give me another inch or so, and I'll be ready to trim you down to size.
No, hush, both of you. Britt here will think you two are serious.
Oh, don't worry about that, Miss Petrie. They've been talking about fighting each other for the last 10 years, but whenever there's a real scrap, somehow the Harcourt brothers usually manage to wind up on the same side.
Well, I wouldn't count on that, Britt. You know, Lex has been getting pretty feisty late here. I may have to take him down a peg or two.
Yeah? Well, now, let me tell you that there's just one thing that's kept me from cleaning your plow long before this.
Oh?
The minute I was to start something, like as not, you'd throw me in jail.
No, I guess I'd have to, wouldn't I? For your own safety? Mm-hmm. Well, if I was ever to slug you back, you just might not be around afterwards. Tell about it.
Well, now, if
that's... Now, you just stop this foolishness. Get out of the kitchen, all three of
okay,
you.
Okay, Aunt.
The idea of brothers talking like that. Well, go along now. Go along, or I'll show you who's the real boss of this family.
You know, Britt, I wouldn't be surprised if you could.
I don't doubt it for a minute, Cat. Not for a minute.
And you too, Lex. There ain't another mouthful of food left to eat.
All right, Aunt Bess. All right.
I'd be real pleased to help you with those dishes, Miss Petrie.
Oh, you think I want some man breaking up my fancy china? No, thank you. You just wait there in the sitting room with the boys, and I'll join you just as soon as I give these things a lick and a promise.
Your aunt sure is a fine woman, Kay.
Yeah. I don't know what we do that or, Britt. Lex don't even remember our ma, and well, I just sort of recollect her real faint-like. It was Aunt Bess who brung us up to all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Well, sit down, Britt. You sit down?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, what are you so fidgety for, Lex? You're going calling on Hannah Joseph again tonight. No cause to act sheepish about it.
I ain't going calling. Cash?
Yeah?
Well, Britt and me was talking this afternoon, and he says, well, he thinks that maybe I can sign up for the Silver Spur Drive.
Is that so?
Well, it stands to reason. They'll probably be needing all the extra hands they can get. Hey, ain't that how you figured, Britt?
Yeah, it usually works out that way.
Yeah, well, you ain't going on no cattle drive, Lex, so just get that idea out of your head.
I don't see why not.
Because I said so, that's why.
Look, you may be the sheriff, but you ain't my boss. Cash, I'm not...
Lex, look, you ain't got the foggiest notion of what a cattle drive means. You wouldn't last more than a week.
Maybe I wouldn't. And maybe I would. It ain't gonna do me no harm to try.
Well, I said forget it. You're so anxious to get a job, there's work around here in town. Plenty of work, huh? Speak to Mr. Crawford.
I ain't interested in a store job.
No, you ain't interested in anything you're fit for.
I made up my mind, Cash. I'm signing on with the Silver Spur if they'll have me.
Yeah, well, you just better start on making that mind of yours. You're staying right here.
Where you can keep an eye on me?
Yeah, that's right, where I keep an eye on you.
You know, someday you and me are really going to tangle. And this might just be the day.
All right, Lex, that's how you want it?
Oh, now, hold on now. Wait a minute here.
Now, don't worry, Brett. I whipped him before lots of times. He isn't likely to ask for it again. Are you, Lex? Well? Yeah, a little fresh air would do him good. Cool him off.
Mm-hmm. Maybe so. Maybe so.
I don't see what got into you, Brett. Encouraging him in this cattle drive nonsense.
Oh, I didn't exactly encourage him. He asked me if the Silver Spur would take him. I said I thought maybe they would.
You should have told him different.
Well, I'm not in the habit of lying, Cash.
No. I'm sorry, Brett. I didn't mean that.
Well, why are you so dead set against him taking out on his own?
I ain't set against it, Brett. Not really. It's just that, you know, Lex is young, might wild, never had a paw to keep a tight rein on him. Needs somebody around, see that he don't get into trouble.
Uh-huh.
Another year or two when he's married, maybe, and he's got somebody else to worry after. Well, things will be different then. He'll be different. But right now... You think I'm riding him too hard, Brett?
Well, he's your brother. You'd be the best judge of that.
Yeah. Huh.
It's getting kind of late, ain't it? You must be pretty tired of that ride today.
Yeah, well, I sure wouldn't object to a little sleep, I'll tell you that much.
Well, come on. I'll show you where you bed down.
I was tired, too. I started sawing the wood the minute I hit that mattress. I guess I'd have slept through almost anything that night. Leastwise, I didn't completely wake up when somebody started pounding on the door along about 2 a.m. I sort of did remember hearing some talk afterwards, but it wasn't loud enough for me to get the gist of it. I figured there'd been some trouble in town, probably, and Cash would take care of it. So I turned over and shoved my face into the pillow. I would have gone right back to sleep again, except a couple of minutes later...
Why,
Miss Petrie, I'm awake. What's the trouble?
It's Lex. He's been shot.
It what?
It happened at Luke Fawcett's place. Cash has gone down there already, but I thought maybe you... Well, Britt...
Sure. As soon as I get some clothes on. I came around the corner, I saw a little crowd in front of Fawcett's gambling hall. Five or six men standing together, not saying anything, just waiting. I started to push through them, but before I could get to the door, Cash Harcourt came outside. His jaw was set and his hat's pulled down tight. Eyes were staring straight ahead, but he wasn't looking at anybody. Marched right past me without even noticing where I was. How is he, Cash?
Oh, Britt.
How is he?
Lex is dead.
Oh.
He was dead when I got here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cash.
Yeah.
You know who did it?
Adam Roby. That's what the boys say.
It was Roby, all right. Sure did.
Yeah. Well, I ain't got no more time to waste here. So long, babe.
Well, you're going after him, huh?
What do you think?
Well, I just... thought if you wanted some company, I guess I could...
No. Go. I'll handle this alone, Britt.
Sure. All right, Cash. Whatever you say.
I'll tell you one thing, Britt. I wouldn't like to be in Roby's shoes when they meet up.
Oh, sir, not me.
Well, you fellas see the whole thing?
Yeah, well, I was standing right there in the gambling hall when it happened. They were playing cards together, and Adam had been winning, and Lex had been drinking. If you ask me, Lex was just plain...
Yeah?
Nothing, Mr. Ponsett, nothing.
No, go on. What are you going to say?
I guess Sheriff Harcourt wouldn't appreciate my opinion, and besides, it's late. I've got to be getting home.
Yeah, I think I'll be going along.
Yeah, so long. Well, I went on into the gambling hall. Old Mr. Hendricks, he was the undertaker in Harnish Creek. He had already arrived. He'd taken charge. So it looked like it was up to me to go back to the house and break the news to Mrs. Petrie. I sure wasn't looking forward to that. But, well, she sort of read it in my face without me even having to tell her.
He's gone, ain't he?
Yes, ma'am. Now, if there's anything I can do, Mrs. Petrie...
No, there's nothing, Britt. Thank you. How did Cash take it?
Well, he didn't say much. He just went looking for the man who shot Lex. Roby, that was his name.
Adam Roby?
I believe so, yes. You know him?
No, not well. He has a farm out south, and a wife and children. I've seen him at church and places. She appeared a real nice woman.
Well, I guess she isn't to blame for...
I don't blame her, Britt. I don't even blame... Well, the truth is, I've been worried about Lex for a long time. Cash had been holding him down too much, trying to make him toe the line too much.
Well, I guess he was doing what he thought best.
But it wasn't best. Not for Lex. You see, he resented it. Being bossed by his brother, he resented it a whole lot. I knew he couldn't keep it in much longer, but I hoped that when the trouble come, it would be between him and Cash. Cash thought the world of Lex, and no matter what happened, he wouldn't have done anything to hurt him.
Oh, no, of course not.
Oh, there must be somebody coming to offer sympathy. News sure gets around in a small town. It ain't even daylight yet.
Oh, here, I'll get it. Yes, ma'am?
I'm Mrs. Roby.
Oh.
Adam's wife. I've come about Adam.
Well, the sheriff isn't here right now, Mrs. Roby.
He's out looking for my husband, ain't he?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that's what I figured. I didn't want to see Sheriff Harcourt. I wanted to talk to you.
Hmm?
You're Britt Ponsett, ain't you? The six shooter?
Yes, I'm Britt Ponsett.
May I?
Well, I just don't know, Mrs. Roby. You see that? Yeah?
Let her come in.
Mrs. Petrie. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so terrible sorry.
Sure. Won't you sit down?
Thank you. Mr. Ponsett, I don't know how to say this, but...
If you'd like to talk to Britt alone...
No, it's best that you hear it, too. Mr. Ponsett, Adam come home right after the killing to get some things together. He told me it wasn't his fault. He swore that it wasn't. He says Lex was spoiling for a fight that Lex drew first. Adam ain't never been a man for shooting, Mr. Ponsett. I believe what he said.
Well, I guess that's natural enough.
Well, he's hiding out now. Sheriff won't be able to find him.
Oh, I wouldn't count on that, Mrs. Roby. Sooner or later...
Well, that's just it. Adam doesn't want to hide out. He wants to give himself up.
Oh?
He says he'll give himself up to you.
To me?
He wants you to promise that you'll turn him over to the district marshal at Standish Falls.
Well, I just don't know what you're driving at, Miss Roby.
Adam's afraid that if Sheriff Harcourt finds him, the sheriff will... Adam's afraid he won't get a trial. That's all he's asking, a fair trial.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Roby. This isn't any of my affair.
Oh, Mr. Ponson,
no, I'm sorry.
Well, thanks anyway.
Brent.
Yes, ma'am?
I'd like you to see that Adam Roby got to the marshal at Standish Falls.
You what?
With Cash feeling the way he does now, he might do something he'll regret for the rest of his life. Oh, it's bad enough, Brent, what happened tonight. I wouldn't want anything worse.
Now, Miss Petrie, I'm certain that Cash wouldn't
do anything. Lex was the only person on the face of this earth that Cash cared about. And he'll blame himself for what happened. Blame himself for not being there. And he'll just have to take it out on somebody. I'm not standing up for Adam Roby, Britt. I'm not even thinking about him. I'm just thinking about Cash.
Well, even so, I'm sure I don't see where my place is,
Britt,
in this thing.
A little while ago, you asked me if there was something you could do.
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
Mr. Ponson, just give me your promise that Adam would get to Standish Falls and I'll tell you where you can find him.
All right, Miss Roby. I'll give you my promise.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six shooter in just a moment. But first, well, I just want to say thanks to you, our listeners, for the many kind letters you write to us each week. It kind of makes us, all of us, feel that our efforts in bringing you the six shooter are genuinely appreciated, and we're grateful. Thanks. Now, Act Two of the story called Revenge at Harness Creek.
Well, it was getting on towards 6 o'clock in the morning by the time I left Harness Creek. According to his wife, Adam Roby was hiding in a cabin in Moon Canyon about 20 miles east, so I started off in that direction. Well, about 7:30, I passed the north boundary of the Silver Spur, and I swung up a wedge trail that wound through a yellow outcrop of rock. It was more than 10 minutes later when I spotted somebody ahead, a man riding down the trail toward me. I pulled up in the shade of some evergreen and waited. The fellow finally came within recognizing distance. Cash Harcourt. Yeah, no doubt about it. From the looks of that bay mare of his, he'd been riding pretty hard. The horse's flanks were covered with sweat and her head was down, swinging side to side with every step she took. Cash hadn't seen me yet, but when he did, he gave a start and his .45 came out fast.
Hey, it's me, Cash. Brent!
Huh? Oh.
I'll take it easy with that thing.
Devil, are you doing out here? Told you I didn't want no help.
Yeah, you did.
Well, going back to town then. I can handle Roby alone.
Nobody said you couldn't.
Then stop following me.
Well, from the looks of the things, I'd say we were moving in opposite directions, I think.
Just running down some tracks here. They stopped a mile or so up ahead. Couldn't be Roby.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think I'll turn around just yet. That is, if you haven't got any objections.
I got objections.
Is that so?
Leave them to me, Brett.
Now, as long as you're certain he didn't come this way, I don't see what difference it makes if I ride on a little further.
I'm the sheriff, Brett. You ain't got no business interfering with the way I carry out the law.
That's right. As long as you do carry out the law.
You talking about?
Roby's wife is scared that you won't bring him in for a trial if you find him.
Huh?
And she asked me to turn him over to the marshal at Standish Falls. Now, I didn't want to get mixed up in this, Cash, and I told her so right straight out. But it's what your aunt wanted, too.
Aunt Bess?
That's right. I couldn't very well turn her down after what happened last night.
Aunt Bess thinks but I'd kill Roby.
She thinks you're upset, that's all.
Well, ain't I got a right to be upset?
Sure you have.
So, you want to take Roby over to Marshall Griffiths, eh?
Yeah, well, I haven't found him yet.
Mm-hmm. Suppose his wife told you where to look. I got a right to ask you, Brett. He's a wanted man.
Are you asking, Cash?
Guess it don't matter. All I care about is seeing that he's arrested, brought to justice. That's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah, well, I guess between us, we stand pretty good chance of finding him.
Yeah. Well, good night.
I watched Cash over my shoulder until he was out of sight, and then I started off again. Let's go, boy. Come on. Come on. About 6 miles later, I passed a waterfall that Mrs. Roby had said was a landmark. I turned Scar into a little box canyon to the left of the falls. A couple of miles further, I came to the shack. Whoa, whoa, Scar. Whoa, whoa. Well, it was easy enough to see how Cash had missed it. Unless you knew there was a cabin in the canyon, it didn't stand a chance of finding it. I walked out into the open, but I stopped a good 20 yards before I got in rifle range.
Roby! Roby, it's Ponsett, Roby! Brett Ponsett!
You alone?
Yeah, I'm alone.
I like tell you where to find me.
That's right.
And you're taking me to Stanton's Falls?
If that's how you want it.
Yeah, that's how I want it. Where's Sheriff Harcourt?
He's riding toward town, last I saw him.
Okay, Ponson. I'll be right out.
About a minute later, he came toward me leading the sorrel pony, and he'd had it tethered behind the cabin. A little man, sort of grayish, with deep-set eyes and a kind of tired sag to his mouth. He was holding a Winchester carbine under one arm. He looked around anxious-like, as if he wasn't certain I was telling the truth, and then he seemed to satisfy himself, and he shoved the carbine into the saddle scabbard, and he climbed onto the pony.
We'll take the south trail and cut around Harness Creek.
Whatever you say.
Let's go.
Mr. Ponsett.
Yeah?
I want you to know that, well, the shooting wasn't my fault. Lex was on the prod. He forced me into it.
Now, that's for a jury to decide, Roby.
Sure. But I reckon you believe my story or you wouldn't be doing this.
I believe you're entitled to a trial, that's all. As far as I can tell, so is everybody else. Sheriff Harcourt included.
You didn't tell him where I was.
I didn't tell him. Come on, let's move along.
Yeah.
We rode out of the canyon and turned south just beyond the falls. But the next hour or so, we didn't do any more talking. There just didn't seem to be much to talk about. And then we started down from the crest of the ridge, and I saw a flat stretch of land out ahead. We still had about a mile of rough mountain trail before we hit that level ground. Roby was about 8 feet behind me, and as I edged Scar around a big boulder, he was out of sight for a couple of seconds.
All right, get down behind some, Roby. Hurry up.
I slid off Scar and I flattened myself against the ground. I hunched over a couple of feet to my left and I got a glimpse of Roby. He was crouched behind a slice of orange granite and it didn't look like he got hit. I got up on my haunches and I ran over toward him. You all right?
Yeah, I guess so. I thought you didn't tell Harcourt where I was.
I didn't.
And how'd he find us?
Maybe this isn't Harcourt.
Now, who else could it be?
I pushed up a couple of inches and I saw him. He was standing on a ledge, right out in the clear, silhouetted against a great big white cloud. The sun was behind him and I didn't have to look at his face, know who it was.
Cash! Cash, what's the matter with you?
Keep out of the way, Brett.
We can hold him off. Just give me a chance to get my carbine.
You stay where you are.
Huh? but you was on my side. I might have knowed you and him are friends.
We're friends.
You're going to let him kill me, huh?
Nobody's going to kill you, Robbie. Now, you just sit tight.
Cash! Cash, I'm coming out!
This ain't your affair, Fred. I told you that.
It's my affair now. But I'm not using my gun, so if you're set on killing somebody, here's your chance.
I ain't got no grudge with you. It's Roby I'm after. Why, apologies. Why, I've been waiting here.
If you're after him, you're after me. I gave my word he'd get to Standish Falls.
Rick, you're forcing me to shoot you down.
That's right. That's just what I'm doing. Ought to be a pretty easy target, Cash. Come on. What are you waiting for?
Think I'm afraid, don't you?
You ought to be. Man ought to be afraid to kill another man.
Well, I ain't.
You're not afraid to kill Roby because you feel you're justified. How about me? How about me? You ready to kill me?
Go on, Brad, draw.
I'm not drawing, Cash.
Don't you understand? Lex is dead and Roby shot him.
Yeah?
You're gonna make it up for that kid. Roby will get out of it somehow. You say it was Lex's fault.
Probably.
You're still standing up for him?
Give me your gun, Cash.
Why can't I kill you, Brett?
Give me your gun.
I want to pull the trigger, but I can't. Why?
I don't know. I don't know, but I was pretty sure you wouldn't.
Like I ain't got much choice. Here, take it.
You want to ride along with us? Make sure I get him to the marshal?
No, head back to town.
All right, suit yourself. Roby! Roby!
Yeah?
Now bring the horses up here. We're going to Standish Falls.
By the time I got back from turning Roby over to the marshal, the Silver Spur Ranch was all ready to start driving its herd north. I moved out with him, so I wasn't around for the trial. I haven't heard how it came out, but I suppose one of these days the news will catch up with me.
Six-Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burke and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Eleanor Audley, Lamont Johnson, Forrest Lewis, and Bert Holland. Special music for this program was by Basil Adler. And the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Oh, by the way, you'll be interested in knowing that the Six-Shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Services. This is John Wall speaking. Jason and the Golden Fleece tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Creek, episode 31 of The Six Shooter. I believe there's 39 or 40 issue episodes. Just lasted a single season. being a sustained show with no real sponsorship. The original air date for Revenge at Harness Creek was the 29th of April, 1954. If you're just listening, my name is Arthur. This is the Grand Hour, formerly between 6 and 7, which is now at 5 to 6. In the first half of the show this morning, I played Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. You can find those in the archive. If you go to scheduling on the WMFO.org page, find Wednesday, find Arthur, the Grand Hour, and click that on. They'll send you a series of prompts. We can find the archive for today's show and re-listen. You can listen to shows back up to 2 weeks, and they get shuffled out. As always, I don't really know what I'm going to do next week for the show. I kind of throw things together over the weekend, but I typically stick with double format, usually a western at the end, maybe two westerns, or maybe no westerns and two adventures. Just gotta see. That being said, I'm just gonna go ahead and sign off. I still got a few minutes, but that doesn't matter. I gotta put it to automation anyway. I don't believe anybody's gonna come in until 9. Matt the Whirlpool isn't on today. I see he's in the schedule. He had his show space open. I don't think anybody took it. Bill would come in at 9, unless he comes in a little bit early. Again, my name is Arthur. This is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks.